Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV every week at this time, bringing you the big conversation, bringing you the great debate, but it can only be a debate if you join in. Above all, I need your telephone calls on 44208601455, or you can SMS the show on 44780008066, or email us at comment@presstv.co.uk. What a momentous week it's been, and what a momentous week it's shaping up to be. In Saudi Arabia, of all places, tomorrow there will be a national day of rage. Tens of thousands of people have signed up over the internet to take part in that day of rage. Many thousands more may join in. Incognito. The rage is, of course, against the most absolutist despotism on the earth. They told the truth for a change earlier this week when they announced that any demonstration, any manifestation, any gathering, any political meeting of any kind was illegal under Saudi law. And of course, that's exactly right. All freedom is illegal in Saudi Arabia. That's why it's a big question mark as to why countries like Britain and the United States are such close friends of such an absolute despotism, especially when they're busily trying to distance themselves from other despotisms, which until very recently they armed and supported. What's going to happen in Saudi Arabia tomorrow if the Saudi military opens fire on the thousands of Saudi peaceful democratic demonstrators? Is there going to be a hue and cry in the White House and in Whitehall for a no-fly zone in Saudi Arabia? Will there be calls to arm the opposition in Saudi Arabia? Will there be demands even to send the Navy to steam off the coast of Saudi Arabia? We all know the answer to those questions, and we all know that the answer is oil, oil and more oil. So tonight we'll be featuring the precursor to the Saudi Day of Rage. I'm going to have a comment show which is filled with rage about Saudi Arabia, though Saudi Arabia may have supporters out there, and if it does, then I want to hear from them. Call me, and your call, your text, your email will be prioritized. In Kuwait, hitherto not as featuring in the revolutionary hit parade of any kind, they've started to march in their thousands in Kuwait, another absolute despotism, where the ruler for hundreds of years and every member of the cabinet, the last time I looked, all belong to the same family. Not so much a dictatorship as a family business of the Corleone type, if you get my drift. Of course, Saudi Arabia and Kuwait are only two of the revolutions underway. In Bahrain, these heroic young, overwhelmingly young demonstrators calling for democracy in their country, facing the bullets and the tear gas, deserve our support and our prayers. In Yemen, must be approaching the end game in Yemen, surely, with hundreds of thousands of people now engaged in the anti-government demonstrations against the dictator for more than 30 years, Ali Abdullah Saleh, who's killed a very large number of those protesters without attracting the ire of the Human Rights Brigade in the West. I wonder why. And of course, the danger of a foreign invasion, a foreign attack on Libya, which would be contested overwhelmingly by both sides in the conflict there, is also one of the issues that is in front of us. I did a debate this very day, which will be published in The Guardian on Saturday morning, with a Conservative MP, Mark Pritchard, in which he argued in favour of Western intervention, and I argued against. Not because I don't want the revolutionaries in Libya to win, I very definitely do want them to win. But I know that the purpose of the former colonial powers in landing their soldiers, their marines, and sailing their warships, and even flying their aeroplanes over Libya has nothing to do with the interests of the people of Libya and everything to do with the interests of the huge investments made by Western capitalist countries. Now, of course, these are my personal views. They're not the views of Press TV. Still less are they the views of the Iranian government. And if you have a different view, your call is especially welcome. Let's go up to the north of Scotland, to Aberdeen, to talk to Zachary on Libya and NATO. Zachary, welcome to the show, my friend.
Yes. Thank you, sir, Mr. George Galloway. I hope this uprising all over the Muslim world is a referendum, a live referendum.
Yes.
And these leaders, these rotten leaders, they should pack their suitcases and go away without causing troubles. Otherwise, the nations, they will put them in the dustbin of the history. And regarding the Libya and the NATO, that they want to put a no-fly zone and interfere with the Libyan internal affairs, I just want to know on what basis the international law and the United Nations and Security Council, they did not take the same action regarding the Zionist regime that they massacre innocent Muslims in the Gaza Strait. Why double standard under the pretext of the human right and the democracy?
Look, Zachary, if you go to YouTube and type in my name look for a video posted in the last week in which I made exactly that point in a very fierce argument with the former British ambassador to Libya. I asked him, where was the no-fly zone over Palestine, over Gaza in 2008, 2009, over Christmas and New Year, when the massacre of the Palestinian civilians, 1,615, was going on from the air? I call it a massacre. Some supporters of Israel call it a perfectly justified military action. If they're watching tonight, I'd like to hear from them and hear their point of view on that very subject. You call us, we'll put you right through. Zachary, thanks very much indeed for the call. I should just point out that the United Nations Security Council has not voted for any such intervention, and I very much doubt that it will. I cannot see countries like Russia and China voting for an intervention of a kind that's very likely one day to be leveled against them. Let's go to Copenhagen in Denmark to talk to Akram on Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. Akram, welcome to the show, my friend.
Assalamu alaikum, George. How are you?
Alaikum salam. Very good to hear from you. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much, George. There is a saying in your language, English, as you sow, so shall you reap.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
I've been doing for a long time, 30, 40 years, and they are dividing Muslim Ummah in Shia and Sunni, and what the Press TV, the Iranian government, and you yourself are telling the truth. You know, the people are awakening from Muslim countries all over the world, you know, not only Arabs, but they are playing the puppet government. They are dividing our Muslim Ummah, and they are fighting and then controlling this white stain. I'm sorry, you know, European and American, they are puppets of Americans. And now, inshallah, when the Press TV and the Iranian government and you yourself and your team, they will convey the truth message. The people will know, they realize, and this revolution will, inshallah, come to its peak, and there will be a real democracy in the world. You know?
Well, I'm very much hoping so, Akram. And, of course, we no longer depend on the sources of information we used to have to depend on. As I told you earlier, the Saudi Day of Rage tomorrow has been organized through Facebook. 32,000 people have signed up for action tomorrow in the Saudi Day of Rage through Facebook. And, of course, Press TV is paramount amongst them all. And there are others in telling the truth, being the voice of the voiceless. That's why more and more people are tuning in. Thanks for that call from Copenhagen. Let's go to Russia and talk to Mohammed about the U.S. sanctions on Libya. Mohammed, welcome to the show, my friend.
Assalamu alaikum, George.
Keep alaikum going. Salam. Where are you in Russia?
And Allah give you more guidance.
Thank you. Go ahead.
First, I would like to make another point that, you know, all these Arab nations, like, you know, so-called Islamic countries, they are banning the demonstrations. That itself makes against Islam. And about Libya, the thing is, when Iran, when without any proof, the UN passed sanctions, and on Libya, okay, there is proof, they passed sanctions, but when it came to Israel, that Susan Rice was telling that the sanctions don't work. I don't really understand. How do they do? Is it all for oil every time?
Well, it's double standards everywhere, of course. Israel would claim that it's the only democratic country in the Middle East, although it won't be able even to claim that for very much longer as country after country in the Middle East becomes a democracy. And, of course, it's highly contestable that Israel is a democracy, at least if you're a Palestinian living under its occupation. But again, we encourage supporters of Israel to call the show. We want their calls. We want their point of view to be aired. Thanks, Mohammed, in Russia. Let's go to Mark in London on Egypt. Mark, welcome to the show, my friend.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you very much for getting me onto the show. I think that what we have seen in Egypt has inspired millions of people around North Africa, the Middle East, as well as the Gulf. And I think tomorrow's day of rage in Saudi Arabia can really be a lightning spark for a mass revolt across the entire globe. Because we need to understand that Egypt, bordering to the Rafah border, to Palestine, now is talking about getting cement into Palestine, and that really means that we are closer, one step closer, to the Palestinian liberation. The fact that people now might have retreated from Tahrir Square, but are going out on strike in their factories, are demanding higher wages, are kicking out their bosses, which have been in bed with Mubarak, is just magnificent. And the fact is that demonstrators burnt down the SAS, the state security, the other day, just means that the state is being dismantled, and we can see real democracy from below.
Well, a good call, Mark. And of course, you'll have seen the official documents that have now been seized by demonstrators, which appear to prove that the atrocity against Christian churches in Egypt over the last months were in fact carried out by the Mubarak regime as a provocation to keep the people divided and weak, and to provide cover for the dictatorship with its Western backers and allies. And now there are many arrests of Egyptian officials for trying to destroy documents which incriminate the Mubarak regime. Mark, thanks for the call. Now let's go to Tehran and talk to Madame Marzia Motahari, who wants to talk about the potential military intervention in Libya. Madame Marzia, welcome to the show.
Greetings, George. It's really nice to talk to you.
And well, you, tell us, how real is this prospect?
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
How real is this prospect, madame?
Well, concerning the situation in Libya, I think the U.S. Reaction has been very conflicting, and it's written a strategy of imposing a no-fly zone, or generally speaking, a military intervention, shows their confusion more than before. Although at first they showed a firm action, I mean, they said that they're going to impose a no-fly zone, but now they're distancing themselves from this initial position, stating that the U.S. cannot act on its own, and they are trying to win the support of the world community. And that's why Hillary Clinton is...
Well, madame, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is my take, that the United States is less keen on a no-fly zone than Britain and France, for example. Secretary Gates, Secretary Clinton have been accentuating the difficulties and the gravity and the seriousness of such an act of war, for it is an act of war, whilst the British and the French governments and diplomats appear to me to be much more gung-ho. Is that your take on it?
The reasons that the U.S. its NATO allies are now giving the military action a second thought, it's firstly because they're not sure if it would prevent Gaddafi from gunning down his people, and secondly, they are in a kind of economic condition that prevents them from going through more costs. and a military intervention would be preceded by a...
Unfortunately, it's a difficult line, Madame Marzia Motahari in Tehran. Thanks for the contribution you were able to make. And if you can hear me, and if you see my old friend, Madame Fatimi, give her my regards in Tehran, please. Let's go to London, talk to Ali on Libya. Ali, welcome to the show.
Oh, hello. Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
First of all, it makes me laugh when you said America is keen to taking part in no-fly zone, because it makes me laugh as well. I think it's with me, lots of viewers will agree. Now America, Washington is thinking, why they didn't go fast and make a handshake with the Libyan rebel leader before French? Because this is now is a game, who can get their hands fast on the oil? That's it. And whatever, UK, French, and America, now is America is thinking, Washington thinking, who should be the first one to handshake with the rebel leader? You know, it's all game. It's sickening.
No, I agree with that, Ali. I'm not in any way suggesting the U.S. is less keen to interfere, just that they're interested in interfering in a different way. They are anxious, I think, about actually going to war with Libya, which is what would be involved, not least because Gaddafi might win the war. And if Gaddafi wins the war, then having gone to war with them, how does that advance the American position?
No, that's not the real things you can see on the Western TV. Let me explain. Let me ask you one thing. In this country, we can see about the tuition fees, is suppose 2 million people or 3 million people make a demonstration. Make sense. Please try to think about this. These 60 million people in this country living, they didn't go out. Only 3 million people gone out. That's for the government that cannot change their policy for few minority. These all sickening people is making demonstration and breaking things and building and fire and shouting, shooting, and that's not can make change government policy. Simple
well,
as that.
We're not talking about a democracy like Britain. How else do you change the policy of the Gaddafi corrupt dictatorship if not by revolution? There are no peaceful ways of doing so.
No, of course there is a peaceful. We did.
Gaddafi doesn't listen to peaceful demonstrations. He kills them.
No, there isn't any peaceful demonstration in the Middle East. We can't see any peaceful demonstration in the Middle East.
Well, that's just nonsense. The Egyptians were out in their millions day after day in an entirely peaceful demonstration. And the Mubarak regime started to gun them down. But when your demonstrators are in the millions, well, you have to have second thoughts about gunning them down. Ali, thanks for the argument. Let's go to Glasgow and talk to Gordon about Libya. Gordon, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you, George.
Go ahead.
I've got 2 points I'd like to raise.
Yeah.
I would be very concerned, and I'm pleased you just said it on the program tonight, that America don't want to impose a no-fly zone. I would be worried about civilian casualties, because they would need to neutralize the anti-aircraft, the weapons, and the rockets that the Libyan government have got. I'd also be worried about friendly fire against the people in the uprising, because America's done it everywhere, even against us, in Korea, Iraq, and Afghanistan. So I'm pleased, and I don't think there'll be a no-fly zone imposed.
Well, it's a bit of a red herring anyway, Gordon, because actually the number of sorties being flown by Gaddafi's Air Force is really tiny. And they could just stop flying them, and the no-fly zone would be pointless, and the course of the war would be, relatively speaking, unaffected. Secondly, as you say, if you attack Libya, as you would have to do, as the Secretary of Defense Gates in the U.S. in Washington said, you would have to attack Libya. And if you attack Libya, you'll kill some people. And, of course, the Libyans will fight back. They'll fight back not just there, but everywhere. And, of course, we'll have succeeded in turning yet another Arab and Muslim country a flame underneath our feet and indeed blowing back and affecting us elsewhere. Gordon, thanks for the call. Great call from Glasgow. Let's go to Liverpool, another great British city, and talk to Rita about Congressman Peter King, about whom I was just talking an hour ago to a good colleague of mine. Rita, welcome.
Hello, George.
Hi.
Well done to Press TV, by the way, for exposing Gaddafi's son, a house worth £10 million. These people have got no soul.
£12 million. £12 million, Rita.
Pardon, George?
£12 million.
It's absolutely diabolical the way the filthy, dirty rich are living off the poor. But this Senator Peter King, I couldn't believe my eyes, George, when I seen the report on Press TV. He is now talking about radicalisation and Muslims and all the rest of it, when we all know there's an agenda to demonise the Muslims. But he used to drive around with a car in America with IRA number plates on it in the height of the IRA bombing, when we were being bombed to smithereens here by the IRA. Although I don't want to go back to that now, because Sinn Féin are doing a very good job there. And
it's a very good point, and it's the point I was making to one of my friends on the phone just an hour ago, that Peter King, the congressman in New York, who was a big supporter of Irish freedom, has reinvented himself as the witch hunter of the Muslims in the United States. Now, I'll be in the United States in the next few days. I'm flying to Canada on Saturday, God willing, to Calgary to give a big speech there, then to Toronto, and then to New York. And I'll be talking to the Muslim community in the United States, and I'll be talking to the friends of the Muslim community in New York City itself, and I'll be setting them right about Congressman Peter King. Let's go all the way to Malawi in Africa. Talk to Chikonji about Egypt. Chikonji, welcome to the show. Yes, hello. Alas, I think it would have been my first conversation with Malawi, but maybe we'll be able to squeeze it in after the break. Is he there?
Yes.
Chikonji, welcome. Go ahead, sir, quickly.
Okay. I just wanted to ask a question.
Yes.
The revolution in Tunisia, it was about the people complaining about the cost of living and their liberty. But you focused on America, the relationship between Tunisia and America and the West. As well as in Egypt, the people are complaining about their cost of life and employment, but you are focusing on the relationship between Egypt, Israel, and America. The same is happening to all the Arab revolutions, whereby people are complaining about their freedoms, but you are still linking it to America. What is that so? That's my question.
Well, it's very easy to work out. None of these dictatorships, none of them, could survive for 5 minutes if it were not for the support that they have received over the years, military, political, diplomatic, in some cases financial, from the United States of America. The Mubarak dictatorship, which was more than 30 years old, it was afloat on a sea of U.S. taxpayer dollars. All of its military brass were bought and paid for in the United States. All of the weaponry which the regime used to keep the people of Egypt down were supplied by the United States of America. The U.S. forced Egypt to play the role of jailer to the people in Gaza under siege, and forced Egypt to cease its role as the heart of the Arab world and become a kind of collaborator with U.S. and Israeli policy. The Ben Ali dictatorship in Tunisia, Ben Ali was a CIA agent bought and paid for from the days that he was a policeman in the Tunisian police force, as documents in the last few weeks have established beyond peradventure. If I had more time, Chikonji, I'd go into it more deeply. But I think most people watching here are well aware of the role the United States has played in buttressing these tyrannies, and indeed the role Britain and France and Italy and other colonial powers have played in the past. I'll be back after the news with the second half of Comment, and I promise you, you really won't want to miss it. Come back after the news for Comment. Welcome back to Comment. Breaking news. Three Shiite demonstrators have just been gunned down in the eastern province of Saudi Arabia by the Saudi police in advance of the Day of Rage that will be dawning there in just a few hours from now, a Day of Rage which will encompass Sunni and Shia, east, west, north and south of Saudi Arabia. Will Saudi Arabia be the next domino to topple in the great Arab democratic revolution? And if it is, what will the West's attitude be to a country they have armed and trained and diplomatically and politically supported for so many decades? It's an interesting conundrum, isn't it? Let's go to London, talk to Walior about the Arab world. Walior, welcome to the show.
Good evening, George.
Good evening, sir. Go ahead.
Basically, I just wanted to say it's all about resources, right?
Sure.
The Arab world, they've got 75% of the world's oil reserves, 30-something% of the world's gas reserves, 37% of the world's gold reserves, right? From Morocco to the UAE, if there was one Arab Union, all that land, all that gas, all that oil, all that water, the Arabs would be a superpower, right? This is what the West don't want. This is what the Americans don't want. Do you see? So
Not only do I see, you are quoting me directly from one of my hundreds of speeches in which
I used exactly that phrase.
You're absolutely correct.
George.
It's about resources. That's why they don't care about Yemen. Because Yemen has only a little oil and is the poorest country in the world. They don't care about Ali Abdullah Saleh. But they definitely care about the Saudi regime.
That's what it is, George. That's what it is. After the fall of the Ottoman Empire, they've carved that place out. They've called it the Great Game, do you see?
Yes.
And this is the problem. So they're going to try everything they can to stop this union from coming.
You're a clever young man. Get in touch with me, Walior. GeorgeGalloway.com. Let's talk now. It was mentioned earlier about the brave young men, maybe women too, I don't know, who have seized possession of a £12 million mansion in London, which properly belongs to the Libyan people, but was owned by the son of the Libyan dictator, Saif al-Islam al-Gaddafi. He's Bashir Lasiabi from the Araya Human Rights Organization, and they've taken possession of this criminally stolen house. I think they've done us all a service. They've acted in the interests of the law. Bashir, congratulations, at least
thank
as far as
much,
I'm concerned.
Thank you very much, George. Thank you very much. That's very nice of you to support us.
Completely. How many of you are in the house?
We have nearly 25 people in the house at this minute.
Very good.
We are doing our best to keep everything in peace and make sure there is no disruption to the neighbors as well. The press has been there many times this morning and last night as well. The police are happy with us as long as we don't do any problem. And they said they're not going to press charges. And that is very cooperative in England here. I mean, that's very good, actually. Another thing is, I want to tell you, lots of poor Libyans who cannot even marry because they don't have a house. Yet his son in England here, he has got over 11 million house, which is not a house, really, it's a castle.
It's a castle, yes.
Yes, it's 12 rooms. 12 rooms. I slept in one of them last night. I'm going to sleep in another one today.
Well, that's only £1 million a room. I mean, that's only the half of it. He's got houses all over the world. And they say he carried millions of pounds around in his suitcases.
You know, George, I worry about the wealth of Libya. How come this small family sucks the blood of people and sucks the oil of people and give it to everyone?
They're calling themselves socialists. They're calling themselves the state of the masses. But the masses don't have houses and can't get married while their leaders are living the lives of international playboys.
That's true, isn't it? That's true. I mean, most of the poor people are suffering because of our dictators in our country, in our lands. Now Tunisia and Egypt has been freed. Thank goodness. We are going to be freed also in Libya, and hopefully that Yemen and the rest of them will be freed soon. And that's very important now to make sure that all these countries would have more of people, public say to their own government and make sure they topple their own dictators and make sure that they have the proper democracy.
Marvelous. Well, make sure everybody keeps the house in good order, because it now belongs to the masses of Libya. It no longer belongs to the crooked son of the crooked tyrant who has been leading your country for more than 40 years. And if you're putting on a good Libyan spread, if the kitchen's in working order, let me know. I'll come up and have dinner with you. The very best of luck to the brave and ingenious occupiers of the house, well, castle really, of Saif al-Islam al-Gaddafi. They've taken it back into popular ownership. That's the kind of people that capture my imagination. How about you? Let's go to stay in London. Talk to Khader in London about Saudi and about Kuwait. Khader, welcome to the show, my friend.
Assalamu alaikum, George. Thank
alaikum salam. Welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you. But, Mr. George, there is some contradiction. Really, you have some contradiction. You're talking about Saudi Arabia. What about Iraq? I am from originally from Iraq. You support an Iranian politics. And, you know, American, they invade Iraq. And American and Mr. Rafsanjani and Khamenei Khatami, they said, we support American to invade Iraq. And, you know, the Iranian, they like, they are very happy with Mr. Nouri Maliki. And look what Nouri Maliki, what he's doing. He's torturing with no mercy, and there is more than 2 million Iraqis victims, and Iraq is all going like they take our oil, and your contradiction. Why you don't talk about why you don't talk about Maliki?
I don't know how you can possibly imagine that there's any contradiction on my part. I can't imagine how you've formed the view that I'm somehow a supporter of the regime in Baghdad. You obviously don't know many people in Iraq, because that's not what they think about me there, I can assure you. There's no contradiction. I'm against all the tyrants, all the dictators, and I'm with the people to bring them down. Khader, it was a bad line, but I think we got your point. It just was ill-placed. Let's go to Oman. We're really getting across the world today. Mahmoud in Oman wants to talk about revolution, and it might be even breaking out in Oman. Mahmoud, tell me, what's the situation where you are?
Good evening, George. How are you? First of all, I would like to correct you. I don't like to talk about the revolution.
Okay, I beg your pardon. That's what the screen told me.
Yes, these things were needed from a long time. As they say, it's better late than never.
Yes, go ahead.
And I would appreciate also from His Majesty to charge these goddamn ministers who are, you know, corrupted and looted this country. Number two is that I would like to just remind you about something that which I have never forgotten. The day you left Egypt and you said you had more legitimacy than Hosni Mubarak. And I salute you for that.
Thank you, sir. I'm more welcome in Egypt now than he is, I think.
Definitely, indeed.
I'll be going back there soon, God willing. I've been invited by the American University of Cairo, by the Palestine Club of the students at the AUC. I've told them that I can only come if the ban on me traveling to Egypt is lifted. And so they're busily trying to arrange that now. I'll keep you posted. Mahmoud in Oman, thank you very much indeed. We have our first caller from Saudi Arabia on the eve of the Day of Rage. Gunaya from Saudi Arabia, welcome to the show.
How are you?
Alhamdulillah, very good. Tell me, is the situation tense there just now?
First of all, George, let me congratulate you for your work, what you have been doing.
Thank you.
In fact, you are a decent, beautiful human being.
You
are neither for the Muslims, you are neither for the Christians, you are neither for the Jews. You are just a straightforward man, and I appreciate you for that.
Thank you so much.
George, I would like to tell you something about what is happening to the Muslims in the West.
Yes.
Did you know that somebody can worship, a Muslim can worship God in the West more than he can worship God in the East, in the Muslims' country?
Tell me why, or how.
Good. If you are a Shi'i, you cannot worship freely in Saudi Arabia. And if you are a Sunni, you cannot worship freely in Iran.
I doubt if the latter is true, but I'll check it out. But as far as I know, that's not true, that latter point. But I promise to check it out. Anyway, go on and make your point. You're welcome.
This is what is happening. The most important thing, hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
The most important thing for the Muslims is to know the Muslim in the ways that the Jews before them have suffered more than what they are suffering today.
Well, the Jews suffered mightily, of course, from anti-Semitism in Christian Europe. So much so that they actually left Europe with the Muslims, under the protection of the Muslims, which is why so many Jews originate from the North African coastline, because they left from Andalusia with the defeated Islamic Empire. Thanks very much, Gunaya. I promise to check out that point that you made, which is not true as far as I know. Let's go to Dubai, where I was just a week or so ago, and talk to Mark. Mark in Dubai, welcome to the show. Hello, Mark. Ah, what a pity. We've lost Mark in Dubai. Well, I had a good time in Dubai. I gave a very interesting interview, I think, to Arab Business Weekly, which you can get online, and which is attracting quite a bit of attention in the Persian Gulf. Mark in Dubai, if he comes back on the line, I'd like to talk to him. Let's go to India. My goodness, we're getting around. It's from Samir, and he wants to talk about Bahrain. Samir, welcome to the show. Samir? Ah, we've dropped two calls in a row. We're talking, of course, on the eve of the Day of Rage in Saudi Arabia. We're talking, actually, of course,
to
people about Bahrain, where the revolution continues to rage. Samir, back on the line. Welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah, I actually want to say that I am a Sunni. And being a Sunni, I believe that people of Bahrain, if they're 70% of them are Shia, they deserve to be ruled by themselves. I mean, as a Sunni, I mean, it's a common sense that anybody would like the majority rules. And if the Shias are the majority, then they deserve to be ruled by themselves. And it's absolutely clear. And the part second I want to add, I mean, it's nothing to do with these, but in general, that over the years, the Western cinema and the Western television have always mocked the Arabs. They have always made fun of Arabs. They have showing them as fools. But yeah. Now they know that the Arab street, the Arab young men are not fools. It is the Arab leaders who were the foolish people. They were the real fools. Now the West has
what a wonderful, what a wonderful call, Samir. There's a book that I bought some years ago called Real Bad Arabs, R-E-E-L, which looks at the portrayal of Arabs in the movies. I'm very interested in the film industry. It's a very, very interesting book, making the point that you have just made. Let me just say that I don't care who's a Sunni and who's a Shia. I don't think that because 70% of Bahrain is Shia, that it should be ruled by Shia. I believe it should be ruled by elected people. And those elected people can be Sunni or Shia. I just hope and pray that they will be wise and just. The Shiites are the majority in Lebanon. But Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah has no intention of ruling Lebanon as a Shiite. The Hezbollah make alliances with Christian organizations led by General Aoun. Half of the Christians in Lebanon are in alliance with the main Shia political parties in Lebanon. That's the way it should be. Not looking at things through this fake dichotomy. We're looking for just, wise, and above all, democratic leaders in the whole of the world, and especially at this point in time in the Arab world. Thanks for that, Samir in India. Let's go back to London, talk to Eddie on the uprising. Eddie, welcome to the show, my friend. Eddie? Oh, dear. Eddie, are you there?
Hello.
Yes, Eddie. Speak up, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, go on.
Yeah, we welcome. Thank you for what you are doing. We appreciate what you are doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, we welcome the revolution that is going on all over the Arab countries. So we and I know that you are not, and we know that you stand for truth and you stand for the human rights.
That's right, yes. Where are you from yourself, Eddie? Where are you from yourself?
I'm calling from London, yeah.
Yeah, but which country are you from originally?
I'm from Nigeria.
Okay, we need some change in Nigeria too, don't we?
There's a lot of corruption going on there.
Well, it's the most corrupt country in the whole world. Nigeria should be an economic and political superpower.
Exactly.
And look at the state that it's in because of the political leaders that you've had. There's an election coming up in Nigeria. Are you expecting any progress to be made?
No, because it's the same party. We are having only one party rule in Nigeria.
Well, sometimes in elections, the only thing guaranteed is who's going to lose them, namely the mass of the people. Eddie in London, thanks for the call. It wasn't a great line, but your point got across nonetheless. Now, Stuart Hastings was in Egypt until a couple of weeks ago. Now he's in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, and he's on the line to speak to me now. Stuart, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, thanks, Mr. Galloway. I appreciate it.
Give me the essence of your experiences in the middle of the revolution in Egypt.
Well, I dropped in 2 weeks before it all happened, so I wasn't expecting anything. And then all of a sudden, you could feel the buildup. People were glued to Al Jazeera watching the events in Tunisia. And there was a slow buildup of a wave, a current, that people were leading up to the first day of protest on the 25th, that they felt like they wanted to see the same thing happen in Egypt that happened in Tunisia. And there was a strong sense that in their previous generations, people thought of, their fathers, they had their time, and that there was some failed uprisings a few decades ago. And that now the youth felt like, you know what, this is our time now, and we're going to succeed. We do not want to go back as failures. We want to see this through. And so it was sort of amazing to see the whole thing come up. And I was fortunate enough to go down to Tahrir Square throughout the 18 days of the revolution, starting in the 25th, and including the 28th, the day when the government was actually toppled and, the police left town and everything else. And I think from a foreigner point of view, as I'm a Canadian, I'm not of Egyptian origin, that it was quite moving to see this occur in Egypt, and that it felt to me like this is obviously the beginning of some sort of democratic or even some sort of federal, democratic Arab state maybe emerging before our eyes.
Well, at least a union. There's no reason why the Arabs from the Atlantic to the Persian Gulf, 350 million people with a single language, which is an enormous asset, and what a language, and with all this oil and all this gas and all these people and all this water, all that coastline, the tourist potential, the gold, the minerals, this Arab Union, even if we kept these individual states, an Arab Union would be an economic and political superpower.
I agree.
It makes you moist-eyed to think about it. Stuart, tell me this. How closely are people in Ethiopia following this Arab revolution?
They're following it very closely, and the surprising thing is Addis Ababa is obviously the headquarters of the African Union, and the African Union receives much of its aid from Libya. I believe it's 15%. So Gaddafi is a big supporter of the African Union, and yet still, despite that, the mood here is definitely people are against Gaddafi. They don't like him, and you can even hear people yelling at the TV at times that, he's an embarrassment for Africa and he has to go. And I would surmise to say he's certainly lost his place within the African world.
Okay, Stuart, thanks very much indeed for that call from Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. Stuart Hastings, a veteran of the Egyptian Revolution. Let's go back to London, talk to John on the subject of dictators in the Middle East. John, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hello, George. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam. Go ahead, sir.
You're doing a fantastic job, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, these dictators in the Middle East, all these dictators, they should take an example from Iran.
Yes?
If you look upon the leaders in Iran, they all are really following the footsteps of our beloved Prophet. They all have beards. You agree with me?
I'm not sure that's the most important characteristic, but anyway, go on. I have
and
a beard.
And if you look upon the leaders of the Middle East, these dictators,
yeah,
they're all clean-shaven, rubbing charcoal under the nose, and following the West like these playboys. I call them playboys.
Uh-huh.
Look at them.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm more interested in form than content rather than form, John. And what they look like, what they dress like, is less important to me than what they act like. And what they act like, almost without exception, is thieves, torturers, and killers. And that's why they're coming down. Not because they've got charcoal under their nose, if indeed they do. Let's stay in London. Talk to Phyllis on U.S. intervention. Phyllis, welcome to the show.
Yes, Mr. George, my question to you is about Libya.
Yes.
Yeah, would the world fold their arms and allow Gaddafi to finish his opponents before they intervene in Libya?
Well, there's a real danger that Gaddafi is getting on top in this conflict. I don't believe that Western countries have any place in intervening in that conflict for reasons which will be obvious. But I think that the question of volunteers from the Arab countries coming across the Tunisian or across the Egyptian border to join the freedom struggle in Libya is another question. And in the Guardian interview that I gave today, which will appear on Saturday, I canvassed the picture that could take shape of Arab democratic revolutionaries entering into this conflict on the side of the Libyan masses, who of course are laboring under the very grave disadvantage that Gaddafi has all the weapons that Western governments sold him over these last few years.
Say now, from reports, you can hear that he's pushing the aloof, and people are dying. He's using all these weapons on his opponents and on innocent protesters. Although you've seen a couple of them taking up arms.
Oh no, it's not just a couple of them. It's a very considerable number of armed people are fighting the Libyan dictatorship, and very bravely too. They killed a Gaddafi general just the other day. They've brought down aircraft belonging to the dictatorship. So let's not undersell them. They are brave fighters, but they need help. But the help has to come from the Arab world and from the masses, because none of the Arab governments are democratic enough to take the side of democracy in Libya. Because, hey, what would that say about democracy in their country? Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time. We've been around the world and back. And I hope that you'll be back, God willing, next Thursday at the same time for more comment with me, George Galloway, on Press TV.
Hello, just comment with your name and the place you left that number. And just make sure that your television volume is set up to 0.
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You redirect me through this phone number and then we'll be back.